Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 157th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include Pickmaster Brandon Lang. We'll talk about games to watch for the weekend, including a special OSU-Baylor preview. We'll talk with actress and singer Brooke White about the new movie Funny Thing About Love. We'll also talk with actor Michael Welch about his new movie Last Shootout. We'll visit with sports journalist and author Mike Sielski. We'll talk about his podcast, I Am Kobe. And we'll also visit with Dr. Alveda King, as we'll be talking about how to be thankful in a thankless world. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and of course, share with your friends. Now, what's the most popular Christmas movie in your state? Well, if you're a gambler, your best guess would be The Polar Express, because that's the top choice in 9 states, including Texas, Arizona, Georgia, and Ohio. Home Alone, Elf, and The Christmas Chronicles were tops in 7 states, and Last Christmas is a big winner in 6. As crazy as it is, A Christmas Story only had 1 state, West Virginia, and It's a Wonderful Life was only the favorite in Vermont. Now, Alaska went way out of the box with The Nutcracker and The Four Realms, while Montana gets it because their favorite Christmas movie is Trading Places. Our weekly visit with Brandon Lang, and Brandon, Cowboys over the Saints last night. Give us your insight, sir.
You know, if you had the Saints like I did, you can't take a six and a half point home dog and turn it over in the red zone. The Saints left at least 10 points off the board easily. The missed field goal on a drive, the 3rd and 2 at the Dallas 32, they give up a sack, they throw a pick at the Dallas 5. Taysom Hill had a receiver wide open for a touchdown, underthrew him. It's unreal. And, you know, it's been that kind of season, you know, where you're on the right side, and the right side doesn't get there. Give Dallas credit. They got 4 turnovers and still struggled to win. So before we put the cart in front of the horse, Dallas has still got to shore up some things. But, man, the Saints are probably wishing Drew Brees win another year. Crazy as that sounds, they're probably in places deep in those meeting rooms. They're probably thinking, man, Drew, you couldn't have gave us just one more year. So pretty much a done deal there. So let's get into championship weekend. I'm sure the game everybody wants to know about in your neck of the woods, Oklahoma State and Baylor. I'll give you a Brandon Lang breakdown of how I think the whole weekend's going to fall. I believe Oklahoma State's going to take care of Baylor. They won the first meeting 24-14. Baylor hung in there. I just, for me, don't think Baylor's quarterback is good enough to win this game. They struggled last week against Texas Tech. I was quite surprised in that struggle. You know, if you break down just how good Oklahoma State, I was surprised that they allowed Oklahoma offensively to do the things they did against them last week. That really did surprise me. And at the end of the day, they still figured out a way to come back and win that game. But watching that Baylor team at home struggle to beat Texas Tech, and that's the same Texas Tech team that could not score on Oklahoma State in a 23-0 shutout. Baylor lost to TCU. At TCU, Oklahoma State beat TCU 63-17. So I just said to you off air, sometimes you lose with Team A before trying to win with Team B. It's been a great season for Baylor. But I believe Oklahoma State is destined to slide into that number 4 spot with a win here and face Georgia in a game that we have 2 great defenses going at it in that game. And then I believe Michigan's going to blow the doors off Iowa. I always say you get blowouts in championship games because teams that shouldn't be there get there. And that brings us to the Iowa Hawkeyes, who kind of fell their way into this with Wisconsin losing at Minnesota. And they came back to win a game against Nebraska that they had no right winning on the face of the planet Earth, but they did give them credit for it. But this is still an Iowa team that went to Purdue and got manhandled 24-7. Against Wisconsin, got manhandled 27-7. They struggled against Northwestern, struggled against Minnesota, struggled against Illinois, struggled against Nebraska, and now you're facing a Michigan team that has been absolutely dominant all year long and are literally two plays away in the Michigan State game from their linebackers losing gap control to losing that game to Michigan State to basically blowing out everybody all year long. Conversely, Iowa gets blown out by Wisconsin. Michigan goes into Wisconsin and blows the doors off them 38-17. I believe Michigan takes care of business, slides into that number three spot where they're going to play a Cincinnati team that I believe beats Houston, maybe a little closer than people think, but beats Houston and punches their ticket. The team that's left out is Notre Dame, because there's no way you can take a Big 12 champion in Oklahoma State and not put them in the four slot with one loss this year, and that one loss was at Iowa State where they couldn't pick up a fourth and two in the fourth quarter. I believe that's your Final Four. Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma State. And that's how your college football Saturday breaks out.
There you go. And looking into NFL this weekend, what's your big take on that, Brandon?
One game. It's an ugly, ugly, ugly board. There's only one game I want to talk about. Santa Lang is going to hand your listeners their Christmas present, and that's the Buffalo Bills over the New England Patriots. Let's break down the New England Patriots in 1 minute or less. They start off the season playing three of their first four games at home. They get blown out by the Saints. They get beat by Miami. They get beat by Tampa Bay. And sandwiched in that little run there, they got their one win in that start to the season. They got their one win at the Jets. So at home, they lose to Tampa, New Orleans, Miami, and they beat the Jets. Now, here's where things got great for them. After they beat Houston, a game in which they went into Houston against the Texans, were trailing in the fourth quarter. David Sims goes 21 of 27 for 312 yards and three touchdowns against the Patriots. They come back to win that game, then they lose to Dallas. So they're sitting there literally at 2-4, and then they should send the schedule maker a case of Cristal Champagne and a case of Dom Perignon, because here's where they went. They played the Jets, the Chargers, the Panthers, the Falcons, the Titans without Derrick Henry and Brown, and the Cleveland Browns. They went 6-0 straight up, 6-0 against the spread. Now, there are four road games this year. 2-9 Houston, 6-5 Chargers, 5-7 Panthers, 5-6 Falcons. Houston, number 29 ranked defense in the NFL. Chargers, worst run defense in the NFL. Panthers, the third worst offense in the NFL. Sam Darnold, three interceptions. And the Falcons, who have the fourth worst offense in the NFL. So they caught a great break in their schedule. They were able to protect Mac Jones. They were able to make them look better than they are. And now what are they doing? They're going on the road Monday night against the number two pass defense, the number six run defense, and the number one defense in the NFL. This is by far the best team they have played all year long. And that includes the Saints, who beat them 28-13, the Bucks, who beat them 19-17, the Cowboys, who beat them in New England in overtime. At the end of the day, you're going to have Mac Jones going on the road for Monday Night Football. And the only reason why this line is not 7 and it's 2.5 is it's the hype of the Patriots. It's the hype of Belichick. It's the hype of the 6-game winning streak straight up and against the spread. And that's the exact reason why the New England Patriots are going to roll into mark this down. They're going to roll into Buffalo Monday night, and they're going to lose. They're going to turn around and go to Indianapolis next week, and they're going to lose again. They're going to come back home and face the same Buffalo team and lose again. And all of a sudden, the 8-4 Patriots, who everybody have going to the playoffs and going to the Super Bowl, are going to be sitting at 8-7, rolling into Jacksonville, where they will win to go to 9-7. And then the last game of the year, they're going to have to go down to Miami and beat the Dolphins, and it's not happening. And the New England Patriots, who were sitting at 8-4, and the world was jocking them like the greatest thing since sliced bread, are going to finish 9-8 and not make the playoffs. Mark that down. You heard that here first. And it starts with getting blown out by double digits to the Buffalo Bills. Santa Lang saying ho, ho, ho with the Buffalo Bills on Monday night.
There you go. Of course, Brandon, I always want to make sure and let folks know about the podcast, the website as well, coming up on the weekend.
Yep, BrandonLang.com, One Day All Access Pass. Well, I'm kind of stuck in the mud here. My other handicappers are doing a bang-up job. Al DeMarco's on fire in the NBA and college basketball. Mitchell Newman's on fire. Guys are picking up the slack. 10 great handicappers. Good place to stop over the weekend.
That's right. Well, Brandon, always great to visit with you. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, bud.
Now, if you're stumped on a gift to give a friend this holiday season, maybe you should hit up the local Goodwill and pick up a used CD of, I don't know, maybe Dookie by Green Day. A new survey asked people what they thought about giving secondhand Christmas gifts. It was framed as an earth-friendly move to pass along a pre-loved item to avoid waste. 23% of people claim they'd consider buying a used gift to prevent it from going to the landfill. Nearly 40% would shop secondhand to try to get a bargain, and 31% would do it in hopes of finding something more unique. 19% said they'd feel grateful to receive a used gift for Christmas. So what kind of used gifts are we talking about? Well, books are number one, which makes sense. DVDs are next, followed by toys and games, jewelry, ceramics and ornaments, CDs, vinyl records, video games, arts and crafts, and bags and purses. Got a new movie in theaters and on demand now. Brooke White, new movie, Funny Thing About Love. Brooke, appreciate you taking some time to be on the show.
Yes, happy Friday. It is great to be here and, you know, just releasing this new movie today. So it's kind of exciting.
And what's release day like post-pandemic, Brooke? How much different does it look like?
Well, you know, I've done a couple made-for-TV movies. And so this one was different for me in that we actually did have a premiere, and I'm actually headed to the airport, but I came back to my hometown of Mesa, Arizona, which is actually where we filmed the movie. You know, I live in LA these days. And so we made the movie here, we premiered the movie here, and it was actually such a fun experience. And we had two theaters full of people, and they were, you know, it's actually like kind of like such a, you know, you can imagine, like, you don't, like you said, as a radio guy, you know, you don't want anybody to see you, but imagine being in front of a giant screen with your big fat head in front of you and all these people around and, you know, cringing and, oh, how you said, you know, it's always a little uncomfortable, but it was actually great to sit with the cast and hear people actually, you know, laughing out loud in the room. So it was a great little premiere, and that was yesterday, but today is the actual day that it is live everywhere. It's in the theater and in select theaters, but mostly on demand is definitely where people can get it. They can get it, you know, everywhere, Amazon, Apple, you know, iTunes, any place that you're streaming watching movies.
Now, Brooke, tell our listeners a little bit about the story behind Funny Thing About Love that's available.
Sure. It's, you know, it's kind of like a 90s-esque rom-com, if you will, a bit of a Hallmarky story with definitely a much more comedic edge. It's like a love triangle at Thanksgiving. My best friend on screen, her name is Samantha, also my real life best friend, Summer Bellessa. She plays the lead, and she, I'm married to her brother, who is John Heater. You may remember him. And he plays my husband, and we, as a family, want to kind of reconnect her with, her old flame, which is my brother in the film. If you're following, it's kind of confusing, but I want her to marry my brother. And, she brings a boyfriend home, for the holidays, and that's just kind of a problem. So we just need to kind of like get him out of the way so we can, you know, get her back in touch with the guy she's really supposed to be with. And, you know, just there's little antics that ensue, and it's just, you know, it's just quirky and silly and funny and just kind of like a nice light thing to watch when you need to take a break from the heavy stuff, you know, when you need to turn off the news and all that jazz.
And Brooke, being on the screen as opposed to being on the stage, where is the, which is the most uncomfortable for you, or have you gotten more comfortable in both?
Yeah. I mean, I think the truth is the world that I live in is discomfort. I don't know if we ever get fully comfortable. I think you just get comfortable with all levels of discomfort, whether you're uncomfortable on stage or uncomfortable in front of the camera. You just grow comfortable with being uncomfortable, is I think the best way I can describe it. So both always throw new things at me. You know, being on stage, things can happen, and there always will be that nervous feeling. And I think as long as you're alive, I just think you need to kind of have a bit of that feeling. There's something about it that propels you and keeps you on your toes and hopefully doing your best. But you know, being in front of the camera it's definitely its own beast, and there's different things to learn about it, but I've really enjoyed it. It wasn't something that I really looked like was trying to do, like to act, but you know, it's really fun.
Now, how much has your music, how much has that helped you in your acting and your stage presence as well?
Oh yeah. I mean, if anything, kind of like, you know, post American Idol life, I think people that were making movies that were looking to cast people that had, you were true musicians, whereas where I kind of found that's how I found my way in, I guess, or how it happened to me is they're, you know, casting directors like, oh, we're looking to cast somebody who's, you know, an actual singer-songwriter. And then they would have me write like three songs for the film. And so in the other roles I've taken, they were very music-centric. This one, however, I don't play a musician. However, I definitely want to mention that me and we wrote a song together called, you know, very easy to remember, Funny Thing About Love. And so that song is the song I wrote for the movie, and that is out as well right now. You can get that everywhere you can stream, look for Funny Thing About Love. So yeah, I think music has just kind of been a very natural fit into, you know, into the kind of movie side of things, the screen. And it's been really fun to kind of merge those two worlds and get to play roles that incorporate that. Obviously that feels like a natural fit, and it's not too big of a stretch, of course, but it's great. I think they are really kind of, they're very complimentary.
That's cool. Now, again, the movie is available now, Funny Thing About Love. Brooke, I want to make sure and let our listeners know not only where they can find more about the movie itself, but everything that you've got going social media wise as well.
Yes, please come find me. I'm a fairly active person on social media, on Instagram as Real Brooke White. I'm actually also have a band that I started during the pandemic called Super Good Things. Just like it sounds, Super Good Things. And that's the whole idea, is we just wanted to put some good stuff out there that was fun, that was lighthearted and the heaviest of times, just make people, you know, want to dance and just kind of, smile and feel good. So I've got that going on. I'm putting out new music every month. Like, I haven't hardly sat down since American Idol. I'm always out there just creating and being silly. And I'm a mom. I have a couple kids, and so it's just like a circus, you know. And I just feel like a lucky person that I get to create and keep connecting with people. Really, is what it's all about.
That's right. And again, the movie is available now. Funny Thing About Love. Go check it out. And Brooke, it's been great to visit with you today. I wish you a great rest of your weekend. Happy release day. And hopefully we'll catch up in the new year.
Oh, absolutely. I look forward to talking to you again, and hope everybody enjoys the movie.
Now, you've got 3 weeks to prep for Christmas. So with that in mind, let's see what you're going to screw up anyway. A new poll looked at the most common Christmas blunders, and here are the top 10. Number 1, leaving the tags on gifts. Number 2, running out of wrapping paper on Christmas Eve. Number 3, sending your Christmas cards too late so they don't get there on time. Number 4, not getting someone a gift, but they got you a gift. Number 5, getting drunk on Christmas Eve and being hungover the next morning. Number 6, knocking over your Christmas tree, or more likely, your dog does. Number 7, drinking too much in general when you're around relatives. Number 8, the presents you mailed don't get there. Number 9, forgetting to put your happy and surprised face on while opening a gift. And number 10, screwing up Christmas dinner. Now, here are a few more that made the top 25. Watching a movie with your family that's got a sex scene in it. Ooh. Having the wrong person open a gift. accidentally breaking a gift you just received, and your kids catching you wrapping presents.
You might remember him from a small series, you know, the Twilight franchise. Got a brand new movie available in theaters and going to be available Blu-ray, DVD, digital coming up next week. Michael Welch on with us today. And Michael, first off, appreciate you taking the time, brother.
Of course. Thank you, Cameron. Good to be talking to you.
Now, Michael, tell the listeners a little bit about Last Shootout and the excitement of opening day, if you will.
Yes, sir. I am very excited about this. So first of all, Last Shootout, it is an old-school, gritty Western. Bruce Dern, my old Twilight alum, Cam Guijandet, an amazing cast. Basically, you know, it is about a lovely young woman named Skylar Whitty. I mean, that's her. That's the actress, and she's fantastic. She's going to be a big star, beautiful, awesome, talented, blah, 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 blah. She is set to marry Jody Callahan, my character, the night of our wedding. She finds out some unfortunate information about my family and about me specifically. She freaks out. She takes off. She's wandering in the terrain for days. She's picked up by gunman Billy Tyson, who's got his own past, his own history, his own set of issues, as many people do out there in the Old West. And basically, it just, you know, from there, it becomes a power struggle. It becomes a movie about ownership and love and revenge, and ultimately what it boils down to, it's just a bunch of guys trying to shoot each other over a gal. I mean, when you talk about Westerns, man, I don't know, it doesn't get much better than that.
And Michael, was this filmed pre-pandemic or during pandemic?
It was filmed during pandemic. This is actually the first film that I had worked on post-pandemic, so didn't know what to expect. I think part of why the film all sort of takes place outside was to keep things nice and open and as safe as possible. Because at the time we didn't, we didn't know very much about what was going on, really. But as a result, I think the film looks absolutely beautiful. We shot it out in a ranch, a beautiful wide open ranch in my hometown, Santa Clarita, here in California. There's all these amazing like drone shots where it's like, you know, the camera's floating way above everybody else and you see the whole scene. So it looks awesome. It looks, like a Western's supposed to look.
And Michael, you talked about being wide open and using the technology with the drones. How much have drones added to the shooting capabilities, if you will?
Oh my God. It's total game changer because, you know, I mean, back in the day, whenever that was exactly, you'd have to rent a helicopter to get those shots. Not everybody can afford a helicopter. I don't know if you're aware. They're quite expensive. Drones, you know, shoot, man, a couple $100, you put one of those tiny little spy cameras that are, you know, 4K HD on one of those, and it looks just as good. If anything, it's like probably smoother because you can control it a little better. So, yeah, big game changer for anybody who wants to make movies.
Now, Michael, how much did you learn from the filming of this one and maybe about keeping in character? Was it easier or a little more difficult this time around?
Well, keeping in character in a Western is probably the easiest thing in the world because you're in the outfit, you're on the terrain, you know, the sun's in your eyes, so immediately you have to just start squinting like Clint Eastwood. If I was exclusively a Western actor, I'd be a happy guy. I love everything about it. I love the like I said, the outfits, the terrain, the accent, the crunch of dirt under my boots. It's the best. So, yeah, not difficult to kind of put yourself in that world when, you know, everything around you is reminding you exactly where you are, you know?
And as we're in the holiday season, how have the Christmas and holiday celebration plans changed for you this year as opposed to last?
You know, not too much. I mean, we're big fans of Christmas around here. We start the Christmas countdown like 45 days in advance. And my wife is a designer, right? So she immediately gets to work basically after Halloween, starts decorating interior, exterior of the house. You know, we have our families, and we have our routine, And basically, we're going to, you know, Christmas is, you know, it's always a pretty intimate event anyway, so we tend to keep it pretty simple. But yeah, I'm really excited, man. I mean, I think collectively we've all earned this one, you know what I mean? Like, I think I really wish everyone a wonderful, happy Christmas and holiday season, and I just enjoy yourselves and your families as much as possible. Take a breath. Enjoy yourself.
That's right. Now, Michael, with the onset of streaming and on-demand video watching, how has that changed what opening day looks like for the actor as well?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, well, that changes everything. I mean, first of all, I'm very happy that this movie is getting a theatrical release because not all of them do anymore. You know, a studio has to make that determination. But I think it speaks to the quality of our film that they've decided to do it. And I hope people, if you have a chance, make that choice. I mean, listen, the on-demand is great, and it's fine, and it's great that, you know, everyone can have that access. But there's just something, I don't know, I'm old school, man. There's something about the theater experience that cannot be replicated, especially in a movie like this. I mean, you want the surround sound, you want the big screen, you want to immerse yourself into this world as much as possible, in my opinion. So, you know, do what you want, but that would be my recommendation, if you can.
There you go. Again, Last Shootout. It is in theaters right now as we speak. Michael, I want to make sure if folks would like more information about the movie and everything you've got going social media-wise, where's the best place?
Yeah, so I am on Instagram and Twitter, Michael Welch Act, A-C-T, you know, because I'm an actor, apparently not a very creative one. Anything that I'm involved with is going to go up on those platforms.
There you go. Well, Michael, it has been a privilege to visit with you, sir. Looking forward to checking out the new movie this evening, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Awesome. I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it was fun. Anytime.
It's the holidays, and there's always a little extra pressure this time of year to tip people. And here are the results of a survey asking who we're going to give extra to and how much we're going to give. Number 1, housekeeper. 47% plan to tip, and the average tip is $50. Number 2, babysitter or daycare provider. 41% plan to tip, average tip $50. Number 3, teacher. 41% of parents will give an average of $25, usually in the form of a small gift instead of cash. Number 4, landscaper or gardener. 36% will tip, $30. Number 5, mail carrier. 27% will tip, $20. And number 6, trash or recycling collector. 19% will tip, an average of $20. There are also people who we normally tip, you know, like hairstylists and baristas. And a good number of us plan to give a little extra to them during the holidays too. 27% of us will tip restaurant servers more than usual during the holidays. 19% will tip hairstylists and barbers more this month. 16% will tip food delivery people more. 10% will tip bartenders more. And 9% will tip their barista a little extra this month.
Got another podcast we're going to visit about, and I'm excited to talk about this one. I am Kobe, and we've got Mike Sielski with us today. And Mike, first off, appreciate you taking the time, brother.
It's my easy for me to say. It's my pleasure, Cameron. Thanks for having me.
Now tell us where your interest in Kobe. I know, being a sports journalist and in the Philadelphia area, obviously Kobe, probably the biggest name in the area. What specifically, see, you're rubbing off on me, is about Kobe really incites the pride, if you will.
Sure. Well, you know, everybody knew Kobe across the country and across the world, really, as a Laker. And, you know, they got familiar with him and his life and his career from the moment he joined the Lakers when he was 17, 18 years old. But I knew, growing up in the Philadelphia area and having worked in this market for a long time, that there was this whole other story to Kobe that we in our area knew well, but that the rest of the globe did not know well. And so it had drama. It had, you know, everything you kind of wanted to know about Kobe Bryant the foundation of it was laid in and around Philadelphia. And so I looked at it like I wanted to do Batman Begins for the Black Mamba. I wanted to tell Kobe's origin story. And so that's what led me after his death, you know, last year to kind of embark on the book. And then I was able to get my hands on these tapes of him when he was 17, 18, 19 years old, these interview tapes. And that led to the podcast as well.
And for you, were you surprised by the outpouring of love and affection that we saw when Kobe passed? I mean, were you blown away by how much of an effect that he had on the culture in general?
I was surprised to a degree, but the more I thought about it, Cameron, the more I realized the reason I think that outpouring was so vast and so genuine was the arc of Kobe's life, right? Like, he traveled this up and down road that led to him creating the perception and in many cases the reality that he was still improving and still growing as a human being, right? Like, there were dark aspects to his life. There was what happened in Eagle, Colorado in 2003 and 2004. There were all the controversies while he was with the Lakers between him and Shaquille O'Neal and Phil Jackson and him being a selfish player and a selfish person and all these things. But he had gotten to the point where he was growing and you know, showing himself to be more than just a basketball player. He was a filmmaker. He was an author. He was a husband who relearned how to appreciate his marriage. He was a girl dad. All of these things that led to people kind of finding a point of connection with him that they hadn't had earlier. And I think that's what made his death so tragic and so earth-shaking for so many people, was that they felt like there was more to come from him. And we will never know what that more was.
And also, Mike, I think we all saw a bit of ourselves in Kobe, whether that was the good or the bad. I think we all had a kinship, if you will.
I think you're 100% right about that. And I think a lot of that traces back to his upbringing, right? Like, you know, he lived for 8 years on and off in Italy, in Europe. And so he comes to the United States to stay for good in December 1991. And he kind of falls out of the sky. He's a 13-year-old kid who's in the middle of the year at eighth grade in a suburban Philadelphia high school. He hasn't had the same upbringing that the white kids have had. He hasn't had the same upbringing that the black kids have had. He's trying to figure out where he fits in. And where he fits in is through basketball. And what that upbringing allowed for him was he didn't see himself as part of any one particular race, culture, creed, whatever the case may be. You know, he certainly explored his identity as a black kid in suburban Philadelphia during those years, but he was accessible to everybody. If he liked you, he liked you. It didn't matter if you were a guy or a girl or you were white or black or anything like that. And I think you're hitting on something really important there, that there was this sense that he kind of could relate to anybody at a certain level.
What was the aha moment going through the tapes and the recordings that really jumped at you, that you were like, I've really got to get in on this?
Well, listening to the tapes, which I got from a confidant of Kobe's named Jeremy Treatman, who had tried to write a book with him back in the late 1990s and wasn't able to do that. They did it, these series of interviews, and then Jeremy found the tapes 25 years later and gave them to me so that I could do the book and do the podcast. One of the things that jumps out right away is how committed Kobe was at an early age to being great. He was talking about jumping to the NBA from high school when he was in eighth or ninth grade. And if you think back to that time, people were stunned that he made this decision, because he was like a wispy little 6'6 guard. Like, he wasn't Kevin Garnett. He wasn't this man child who was 7 feet tall and you know, ripped with muscles, who everybody could look at and go, oh yeah, I can understand why Kevin Garnett's going straight to the NBA out of high school. Kobe wasn't built like that, but he had been planning for this for a long time. His orientation was toward professional basketball from the time he was 13, 14 years old, and he was willing to do whatever he needed to do to make that dream come to be. Sacrifice relationships, sacrifice a social life, work harder than everybody else. And so that really comes through in the tapes, I think.
And again, the podcast, I Am Kobe. Mike, I want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can catch up to the episodes, the writing, and everything else you've got going social media-wise as well, sir.
Sure. So the podcast is I Am Kobe. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts, you know, iTunes, any sort of app. We're four episodes into it now. There's another six to come, plus another two bonus episodes. The book comes out. The book is The Rise. Kobe Bryant, Pursuit of Immortality. That hits stores in January, January 11th. You can follow me on Twitter, at Mike Sielski. Same thing on Instagram, at Mike Sielski. There's a Facebook page. There's I'm standing with a sandwich board at this, at street corners selling, saying I will sell books for food. So, you know, you can find me just about anywhere talking about Kobe.
That's awesome. Well, Mike, it's been a privilege to visit with you today, sir. Have a great weekend. Happy holidays. And hopefully we can catch up in the new year.
That would be great, Cameron. Thank you so much.
Now, if this woman was looking to spend Thanksgiving in the hospital, then she hit the jackpot. A woman in Houston was playing a slot machine at a convenience store last week with another woman. She wasn't winning, so she poured lighter fluid on the slot machine and set it on fire. Now, the other woman was furious because she was no longer able to play, so she started fighting with the woman and it spilled out into the parking lot. Well, at that point, the mad woman shot the woman who started the fire and then fled the scene. It's unclear what their relationship is, but the police say they knew each other. The fire starter was rushed to the hospital and she's okay. The police are still looking for the shooter. The woman who started the fire is probably looking at charges too, but the police haven't announced anything yet.
I didn't even have the chance to tell her this before, but I don't get real nervous on guests very often, but I'm a little nervous talking with Dr. Alveda King. Excited to talk to her, and we're going to talk about being thankful in a thankless world. And Alveda, first off, thank you so much for your time.
I'm so glad to join you, your viewers, and your listeners, and to just say God bless everybody.
And Alveda, in the times that we live in, I mean, where do you pull the thankfulness? I mean, it's got to be inside, doesn't it, to begin with?
Well, it's good to find something every day that we can appreciate, even in the darkest times. My grandfather, Reverend Martin Luther King Sr., of course, lost two sons in the civil rights movement. My uncle, Martin Luther King Jr., Uncle Emil, was shot in 68. My dad, Reverend Alfred Daniel Williams King, was killed in 1969. And then in 1974, Granddaddy's wife, Alberta King, was shot playing the organ at Ebenezer Baptist Church. And my grandfather said something that was just amazing to me, but it remains in my heart today. Thank God for what we have left. And almost everyone can do that. Even if you read the story of Helen Keller, for example, severely disabled, to make contributions anyway. So I do that. Sometimes it's not easy because life right now is very difficult with COVID and race wars and CRT arguments and all of that. God, fear not. Don't fight each other. Fight to live.
And I know, Dr. King, you were just announced as chairman for the Center of the American Dream. And how much does the thankfulness play into that and being a part of something that your family has been and striven to move forward over the years?
The American Dream is rooted in the words, in God's trust, one nation under God. So at the Center for American Dream, we deal with human dignity, with civil rights, of course, and all of the other issues that affect us as Americans. And it just says not America only, just America first. And with that is one nation under God. And so if we begin to embrace our lives here in America with that perspective, it's easier even to find things to be thankful for. For instance, my wonderful assistant, executive assistant, Eugene Vigil, died of COVID not long ago. My friend Herman Cain died of COVID. My friend Harry Jackson, those were mentors and friends and people that I worked very closely with. And I was like, oh, what do I have left? He said, you have God first. You still have God and you have a mission. And there are many other things that I could mention that I have left. And I think each and every one of us, especially if we've been impacted by COVID, and almost everybody has, yes, either you've had it or argued with somebody about taking a shot or not taking a shot. But don't argue with each other. Just fight to live and fight to be kind and to repent.
What can we learn from the what has happened these last 2 years, and how can we mend those fences that unfortunately we've let emotions build up even stronger strongholds than we've had before?
If we can remember, we are one human race, Acts 17:26, of one blood, God made all people, all flesh came from one blood. So we are one human race. My uncle, Martin Luther King Jr., said we must love his brothers. He didn't say neighbors or kinsmen or cousins, but brothers and sisters. I added sisters. So the skin color issue, we are one blood. Now people say Black lives matter. Black lives matter because all lives matter. Black people are human beings. So put it in context to every life matters and that God's love matters. Is there a critical race? Absolutely. The human race. The one blood human race is the critical race. So if we can get those perspectives and stop fighting, no, we're not caught. We can actually see each other. We can see ethnicity and we can celebrate ethnicity. Jesus gives sight to the blind. So we can't go around saying I'm blind, I can't see. And so I have to remind people of that all the time.
And what are the main tenets of the Centers of the American Dream? What are the main tenets and the goals as you move forward into a new year as well?
Center for the American Dream deals with human dignity from the womb to the tomb. We want our babies to all be born. We want them to be born into safe and secure places in society. So we have to work with all the other centers. We work with every center, whether it's education, justice, the area that gives you the second chance when you come out of prison, finances, medicine, safety and security. I can't name all the centers, there are several, but each one is important. So life from the womb to the tomb, human dignity for every America, regardless of any circumstances. And so we're going to be traveling around the country to colleges with panels and talks and that kind of thing. We're going to develop the website pretty well so that people can weigh in and add their testimonies and let us know what's happening in their communities.
And Dr. King, I know we're not where the dream ends, but what kind of advancements are we making? Too many times we focus on what we don't have, but talk about some of the advancements that you have been able to see.
Well, I'm 70 plus years old now, and I lived in a time where you had to drink out of colored water fountains and white water fountains. You couldn't go to a movie theater. You'd have to have some sequestered, so some secluded seat or something. You couldn't try on clothes when you went to shop. All of those kinds of things did happen in my early lifetime, and none of that exists today. Justice has been kind of slow in some cases, but the young men in Alabama, I believe, that were accused of raping a lady and years later have been exonerated through DNA testing. And what we're seeing, I was in D.C. this week, and with the Dobbs case, mm-hmm. deciding whether or not to send the question of abortion states and let the people weigh in with their votes and those kinds of things. So I have seen a remarkable difference. And young people, you know, little kids don't even necessarily know that. I've had little children come up to me and rub my skin to see why I was different from theirs and that kind of thing. But kids don't discriminate that way. My mother says hate has to be taught.
Yes.
And we will love each other long if we work on it.
That is right. Well, Dr. King, I want to make sure and let our listeners, if they would like to find out more information about the Center for the American Dream and any of the other works that you've got going, I want to make sure that we direct them where to find more information.
Well, if you will just put the AFPI, American Center, not for the American Dream, I'm sorry, America First Policy Institute. And once you get to America First Policy Institute, you can scroll down and find me also at alvitaking.com and Speak for Life.
Well, Dr. Alvita King, it has truly been a privilege. I appreciate you carving some time out. You even pulled off to the side of the road to share some one-on-one time with us today.
And Merry Christmas, everybody. Yes.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 157th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, maybe anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all at GQWithCam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, you can visit the merch store where we've got hoodies, shirts, tumblers, mugs, stickers, backpacks, all kinds of stuff at gqwithcam.com/shop. And if you have a special guest idea, email me, Cameron@gqwithcam.com. Would like to say thanks again to our good friend Brandon Allen. Came up with the theme music for our show. We're going to let him play us out and hope you have a great rest of your evening.